dog parlor.
I think people are just on edge and every little thing bothers us, man. Like, so I'm on this food truck committee for the neighborhood, right? So, you know, obviously I'm a big foodie, you know that. And I've been booking, me and this little lady at the beginning of COVID, we started booking food trucks for the neighborhood, you know, one to support small businesses. As you know, the restaurant industry and this time has really been struggling with shutdowns early part of COVID, you know, depending upon the state or whatever. But anyway, so we've had a truck in this neighborhood once a week, sometimes two trucks weekly during beginning of COVID. So let's call it end of March until now, right? So like 7 months, right, going. Tons of trucks locally supported, you know, businesses, and like the feedback has been really good, right? So, you know, every truck we've had has parked in the same spot in the neighborhood. So in our community, we don't have like a pool in a tennis area where like the truck could park right in a general parking lot. So they have to park on the residential street. But where the truck currently parks is like, there's only houses on one side. So anyway, truck is parked there for 7 months, no problem. So literally I'm putting out the announcement and reminder for the truck for tomorrow and the pre-order instructions. Like, everybody's hype about this truck, right? It's a pizza truck. Really good stuff. As I'm press send, like the lady that books trucks with me is like, hey, did you just see the email from the HOA? I'm like, nah, let me look again in my email. Bro, somebody complained that the food trucks run off of generators, right, to cook the food. Somebody complained like, hey, the generator is too loud and, you know, it's really bothering us. Is there any other options to park the trucks, right? So I'm like, no, there's really no other place to park the truck. Like, the place to park the truck is kind of in the middle of the neighborhood, equidistance walking for a lot of the residents. And anyway, so we're going to pivot, park the truck in another spot. But you're like, bro, you know me, man. Like, I'm done. Like, I told like little lady in the neighborhood, I'm like, you know what? Like, people aren't appreciative. Somebody complains. Like, I'm not dealing. Cause you know, where else are you going to park the truck? You're always going to piss somebody off. So like, are you really that angry at life where a food truck outside of your house is causing you to complain? Like, do you go to bed at four? Like, the trucks show up at 4:30, bro. They're here from 4:30 to 7:30. What the fuck are you doing at 4:30 that you're so angry that a generator outside of your house that you could barely hear, that's probably no louder than the man that cuts your grass, right? You want to complain about and ruin it for everybody else. So it's just like, man, people are something else, man.
There are some petty, petty people in this world, bro. Petty. Like, I think the older I get, I realize that more and more. People don't know how to adapt and adjust and go with the flow. And, you know, everybody want to. And see, there will be some people that might say, like, why didn't you push for that a little harder? Why ain't you staying your ground? What would you say to that?
You know, it's funny, man. So we have a different, so the front of the neighborhood is a little older, more chill. The back of the neighborhood is with the fun group, right? So like drinks in the driveway, really big show up and turn out for the food truck. So there's a few different threads of text messages that I'm on. So I alerted the two text message threads that I'm on that, you know what, you know, y'all eat up tomorrow. Cause like the pizza truck's the last truck, like I'm done. And I copied and pasted the message from the HOA president, who's cool, by the way, from whoever this anonymous resident is. I kind of have an idea who it is, but anyway, and everybody on the thread was like, man, bummer. Like how mad could you really be? And my other dude in the text message brought up a good point. It's kind of like our response or your response should be, thanks for the feedback and keep booking trucks. Because at the end of the day, right, they don't control the street, yeah. Right? Like, unless you're breaking some HOA bylaw, which I don't think there is an HOA bylaw on food trucks, because if there was, we wouldn't have been able to book them for 7 months, right? But like, I don't think it's their call, right? Like, I think as a good neighbor, you could say, okay, you know, we'll move the truck around. But eventually, whether you support the truck or not, there may be a food truck in front of your house, and fucking get over it, right? Just like if the garbage man comes, or this, you know, somebody's yard man parks in front of your house because they got to cut the neighbor's grass. Like, you don't complain that, hey, your yard man's machines are too loud.
Exactly right. You're exactly right.
So to me, a food truck's a service, just as a lawn man is a service. So it's like, you know, but that's a good point. Maybe I'm just emotional and saying, you know what? I'm not going to book any more trucks, taking the time, less work for me. But I'll be honest, I enjoy the trucks, right? Like, we had some good trucks lined up. Like, I wouldn't book any truck that wasn't a 4-star on Yelp.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm bringing hot trucks to the hood, right? Like, so anyway, so I'm like, you know what? Like, and obviously this person didn't support the food trucks, because if they did, they would reach out to me directly, because I'm the one that posts the Facebook announcements. Like, if you had a problem, you're like, yo, Patrick, like, yo, man, like, I'm really enjoying the trucks. Great job bringing the trucks. We're enjoying them. Do you think maybe we could just spread the love around and have the trucks park? But if you email the HOA people, you don't support the trucks in the first place.
You want it shut down.
Yeah, you want it shut down. And like, the only thing I can think of is, like, the truck last week, because there was a lot of people getting pine needles last week in the neighborhood. And, like, normally where the truck parks, the pine needle people park. So the truck had to literally park maybe 35 feet down the street from where the normal, like, they would normally park. And that's why I think I know who these people are, because the truck was a little bit more in front of their house versus two doors down. And that's all it was, because every other truck is parked in the same spot. No fucking complaints. The little man with the barbecue truck parks down the street a little bit. And it's like, you know, we got problems. But, you know, and purposefully, you know, if you understand how this stimulus money has trickled down and how it's affected minority businesses, like, dude, a lot of black businesses and minority businesses didn't see any of this bailout money from COVID, right? Like, especially, you know, in the restaurant industry, the big brands got the bailout money. So think of all the big restaurant brands. They're the ones that got the bailout money. It didn't trickle down to the mom and pop Jamaican spot or the mom and pop's food spot. Like, those are the ones that are struggling. So, you know, I've really been, obviously, with the, you know, support black businesses with the racial divide and all the stuff that we've been going through the last 6 months, really not purposely sought out black food trucks. But, like, if I see a black food truck's got a 4-star, like, I'm booking them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, a lot of the food trucks I've been booking have been minority owned, you know. So it's like, you know, but yeah, anyway, you already know what time it is, man.
Man,
with that,
I thought I had hope, man. I thought when Obama got elected president, man, we were going to be on the right track as a country, or, you know, getting on the right track, even though we still had a lot of issues. I thought that was a great step in the right direction, and we took one step forward and three long jumps back. So I don't know where we are now. I think I don't, you know, I used to feel like I would never see a black or non-white president in my lifetime. And the fact that we got one was a really big surprise. And then I'm thinking, okay, you know, things are different. And now I'm just, even though people are a little bit more tolerant, I guess I should say, of non-white people in the White House, the attitude toward people that don't look like you seems to be, I mean, in my lifetime as a conscious adult, like, I'm thinking that it's the worst it's been since I've been an adult. You know what I'm saying? And I really don't know. I don't know where it's going, bro.
Yeah, man.
I don't know where it's going.
It feels, you know, it was funny as I was thinking about that yesterday, man. Like, it feels like this is the worst I've ever seen our country, bro. Like, it honestly feels, and like, take COVID out of it, right? Like, COVID has nothing to do with race relations, right? Like, I think COVID just makes it worse, because you got to deal with so many other things that just pile on to seeing the stuff. But
well, let's say, can we say something differently? You know, COVID has affected or exposed the still injustice on some level, right? That brown and black people are affected by this more severely than any other.
Group. That's a good point, man. Right, like systemically, specifically on healthcare, right? How we're treated within the healthcare system. One, right? Like there's a reason, and then it further exposed the racial income divide, because that's connected to the death rate, because black and brown people are in more essential roles, which obviously you're going to be more exposed. And then as being exposed, you're already you already got like pre-diabetes and hypertension and other things that just magnify COVID. COVID was the perfect storm to hurt minorities, right? Like, you know, and I don't care who's in office, right? It's like, if you don't politicize COVID, if you had Hillary Clinton in the office, COVID was still coming. The response may be a little different, but black folks still would have been leading the death rate because you're an essential worker and you're exposed.
Yeah.
Like, we might have less dead Americans because I think, you know, obviously we know with the recordings that came out last week that Trump downplayed it, and there's tapes on that, right? Like, I think his response was irresponsible. I don't blame COVID being in America on him because, you know, we live in a global society. It was coming anyway.
It was coming anyway.
But yeah, but I think, you know,
we could have just been more prepared.
Yeah. Would you have 70,000 dead people versus 180,000? Potentially, right? Like, but, you know, a large amount of those people that are 70,000 versus 180,000 were still going to be black and brown people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, man, I agree with you. But, I where do we go from here, though, man? Like, because I feel like I don't know what, like, I have my own thoughts on how to help heal race relations. But it's a long downhill breaking putt. It is not anything that you're just going to fix tomorrow, man. So like, where do you, like, if you were to say, if you were to get on top of, you know, on, if you were to get on CNN tomorrow and they said, Jay Scott, you got 5 minutes, tell us how to heal race relations in this country. What would you say?
That is a really, really, really good question. I think where I would start is where people who try to resolve gang conflict start. I would get a team of mediators that at the end of the day, they might not see eye to eye on all issues, but they put forth the collective effort to be unbiased and objective during the hearing. And I don't want to call it a hearing, but a summit of sorts. And you have the people who represent the far right of the rightist and the far left of the leftist, and they come together. And I mean, this is the Ku Klux Klan guys, this is the White Horse guys, this is all of them. Get them there. And we have some other couple of people, a few people that are responsible for pleading with both sides, right? And on the non-white side, you got people who still try to keep the Black Panther Party alive, NAACP, all of these, you know, pro-Black organizations or pro-minority organizations. But we plead for all sides to basically try to have unity for sake of for sake of the planet, for sake of the, you know, the future generation, and for sake of the people's kids that are sitting in the room, it, you know, that's what it's really ultimately about. And if we don't figure out a way to come together and put aside the non-essential bullshit, then yeah, it's gonna be, I feel like I would not be surprised if in 5 years, if this just festers and boils. No, I wouldn't even say 5 years. I would say within the next 12 months or 18 months, I wouldn't be surprised if there were like rumors of some type of like civil war or something. Like, it's really bad. When people can't even come together and protest and have a peaceful protest without somebody from the other side trying to kill another person with an opposing view. Yeah, man, we are.
Yeah, you know what was pretty telling last week for me, man. Like, I'm not saying I lost hope. So I you know, I like your idea. I think it's an interesting one that you're taking the extremes to come together. I think, you know, mine's a little bit different. But I like yours because you've got to change people's mindset to then be open. So that's interesting. That's like, you know, I've asked that question to different people, and that's the first time I heard like bring the extremes together in a mediation style and see if you can.
Pat, here's the thing. I'm not even saying everybody has to change. You don't have to. This is not for the left to change the mind of the right, nor the right to change the mind of the left. It's for everybody to realize that we don't have to fucking agree on everything to get along. Like, it's fine if you don't like black people, if that's your thing. Just stop killing them and try to treat them fairly, right? Because you don't want retaliation. You don't want an uprising. You don't want, you know, the person that's trying to stand up for your white supremacist views to have to spend the rest of his life in prison. So, like, he doesn't want to do that. He probably has kids in the family. So, for the sake of everybody, let's just try to get along. I mean, it sounds really simple and stupid, but, like, I think it starts with a conversation, because I don't know what can happen to take hate out of people's heart, you know? And I don't think it's anything you can do to change people. I think people are really going to have to just be like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter that I dislike this person or this thing about this person or where this person's from. It doesn't, like, at the end of the day, that's just something I should just keep to myself and just mind my own business if I have to. But I don't know.
Yeah. You know what? I lost hope, man. Or I would say what really made me sad and like a wake up call was, you know, I don't know if you saw that the opening night of NFL last week where the Chiefs and Texans played, and the Chiefs are, I think, one of two stadiums in the NFL that have fans. And so they had, a certain number of fans, and, you know, it being the first game and all the stuff we're doing, going through within the nation, they both teams met at midfield and locked arms. Right. And they didn't kneel. They just stood and locked arms, and the PA announcer made an announcement to say, you know, we'll have a moment of silence for, you know, racial injustice and equal whatever for all people, bro. And the fans booed,
man.
Like, not like nobody knelt. They just locked arms for racial equality. Like, if you can't even, like, how do you boo for people trying to be equal?
Right.
Right. Like, I don't know if obviously everybody in the stadium booed, but you heard the boos. You could read about the article. It's like, man, like, they didn't kneel. They didn't say black power. They didn't say go to hell, white people. All they said was, we're locking arms for racial equality. Like, so if you don't even want equality, which is kind of crazy, because that's like, I'm a big constitutionalist. I think the foundation of the American Constitution actually is pretty brilliant. It's not executed in the way that it should be as written on paper. But I think there's nothing in the Constitution that I disagree with, meaning, like, I think everything in our Constitution and the premise of life, liberty, justice for all people, and freedom of speech, and, you know, being able to, you know, 2A and carry a gun and protect you and your family. Like, I'm for all that. Like, I think the Constitution is fair and makes sense. Again, it's not implemented across the board, but that's our fault, not the people that wrote it. But man, if you can't even say, you know what, I'm just gonna have a little moment of silence because everybody should be created equal and treated equally. There's like no hope, bro. Like that. Yeah. Like, but what's funny is because it goes to the exact reason of why they locked armed in the first place, because they're doing it for people like you that boo.
Right.
Like, you're only helping the cause when you boo.
I tell you, you know, one lesson from history, or several lessons from history that none, well, one in particular comes to mind, but you maybe can help me recall others. But I think one thing that we have to do is just keep moving forward and being positive, because I think ultimately, if you can stand long enough, positivity always wins, right? In the civil rights situation or example, you had, you know, people, I'm pretty sure, like, the people that were in that era, I mean, can you imagine, like, they're sicking dogs on people and pulling out water hoses and shit like that. So you imagine being in that era and comparing it to where we are now, when we feel like we have no hope, and what they were thinking, they probably was like, damn, like, this is the only way out, is just to, you know what I'm saying, be a nuisance almost. Like, we're going to just be here and be present all the time and just force them to deal with us. And that's sort of what we're doing right now. We're forcing, we're a problem, you know. Now, you know, so many people of African-American descent have just as big as platforms, if not bigger, than people that don't look like them. And that is a problem in and of itself, because now their voice carries weight. And then it's just social media multiplies that. And I think the wave is going in the right direction. I think the biggest part of the wave is on the right side. Not right politically, but in terms of the ethics of the situation. I think, you know, we're on the side of the good by fighting for fairness and fighting for equality. And it is, if we can persist and persevere, I think we'll all be happy that we spoke up when we did, or we, you know, stood up for something that was stood up for someone's rights that were being taken from them when we did. I think we'll look back on that, and or we'll be the generation that people look back at 15, 20 years from now, 50 years from now, and say, like, wow, like, this was like almost a post civil rights era. You know what I'm saying? Like, you got the civil rights era, and now we're twice removed, and or 60 years removed, 70 years removed, and we're still sort of battling for the same basic human rights. And yeah, I think it's an uphill climb.
Yeah, you know what's interesting? So, you know, I work with a colleague. Her daughter's maybe 11 or 12, and she was saying how, like, she thinks her daughter's generation is the one that's really going to change the world. Because I think there's two parts, right? You got people of all different ages and races. So it's like, do you basically just let, regardless of color, anybody that's a racist asshole and bigot, and there's racists on all cultures and sides, you just let them kind of, like, you're not going to change them. Do you put your effort, energy into changing and making sure that the people that are young and their minds are sponges and open? Like, I feel like you put the energy and effort into them versus going to change someone that's already lived. You know, it's hard to go change Bubba that's sitting at the Waffle House that has a Confederate flag. Like, you're not going to change him. So do I go put the energy and effort and expose the young child to different cultures and ethnicities and all the good stuff that you need to go and be instilled in that individual to be a better human and to treat humans better. But anyway, it was interesting because she felt as though her child's generation, she was like, look, my daughter's 12 and she corrects me on things, right? And mind you, this individual is like 33, 34. But she was saying, if, you know, if I slip up and say something that may be disparaging or may not be politically correct, like it's my daughter that's 12 years old that steps and says, you know what, mom, that's not right. You shouldn't say that, right? Like maybe it's the younger group that you know, has more damn sense than some of these people that we, you know, our age group and older by the time they get, because they're way more accepting of like LGBT, you know, T and races, race. They have more diverse groups of friends. They care more about the environment. All that stuff matters. And then you look at our kids, or even, you know, half the age of that individual, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, whatever, like they're going to be even more in tune, hopefully. Right. And I think you're going to have more mixed race kids as America's changing. So I think you will eventually work ourselves out of it. Now, you're always going to obviously have racism, where there's differences in any type of ism, right? You're going to have classism, sexism. You know, we know in the Black community, we got colorism, right? Light skin versus dark skin. Same thing in the Asian community. They have some of them have colorism things. So you're always going to have isms. It's never going to be a perfect world, but I hope with, as the people in this world look different across the board, and there's more intermingling and different color families and just acceptance through education, and it starts at home. I think eventually we'll work ourselves out of it. But shit, man, who knows? How long could that be? I mean, I bet people that are sitting back that fought on the front lines of civil rights are sitting here thinking, damn, it's 2020 and y'all are still dealing with that. Right. Like, although there's not dogs and water hoses, now it's within political systems and in corporate America and in healthcare systems, if you can believe it. Right. We know Black women die at a higher rate in childbirth. You know, we know Black men die at a higher rate of colon cancer. Like, man, y'all, I'm sure they're still sitting back thinking, damn, y'all still dealing with that? Like, I got my ass bit by dogs and fire hoses on me, and for you not to have to deal with it, it's just sad, you know?
Yeah, man.
Man.
It is sad.
Man, what do you think about, like, you know, athletes having a voice and coming out and taking stances? Like, you know, like, do you think they're taken seriously? Like, do you think people even care what an athlete has to say?
I think that almost, you know, I'm a big fan of Seth Godin, and I read his book, Tribes, and basically by Seth's estimation or research that he did, almost anybody can have some platform. Of at least 10,000 people, right? Their tribe, he called it. And, you know, you take a person like an athlete and their tribe is much, much bigger than that. So I think that to their tribe, their voices matter 100%. You know, you look at somebody like Donald Trump, like, there are lots of athletes that are way smarter than him. I'll listen to what they have to say more than I listen to what he has to say. So, and but he has a tribe also. Roughly half the country is his tribe.
Yep.
So it's like, it doesn't, I don't think credibility isn't what it used to be, where it was about you being a person of substance, or you being a person intellectual, or you being a person that, you know, you're super insightful. I think nowadays you just have to either have something someone wants or be someone that someone else wants to be. Look a certain way, or be in a career to somebody, and they're going to follow you. They're going to listen to you. They're going to be like, I want to be there one day, or I wish I was that person. And you're going to have them. So I'm happy that LeBron is the person he is with the platform he is, and the fact that he's kept his nose clean for pretty much his whole career. And to my knowledge, there have been no scandals. There have been no, like, other than how people might have, you know, criticized some of his performances in clutch moments. Outside of that, like, he's a real stand-up guy who's doing some super positive things. Like, I think regardless if a person respects him because of his color or not, like, the impact he makes will always be louder than the negative person's, like, criticism or disrespect of a person like that. And, you know, he's not the only one. And it's I'm happy that we're in this time, like, and we're not embarrassed to be represented by those guys. Like, I actually think more of them should speak out the way some of them. And I do get that, like, everybody can't be LeBron and have the press all over them and want to hear every word they say like LeBron. He gets as much camera time as he does because he's a global athlete.
Right.
But if given the chance, like, and the time is right and you can do it, like, I feel like, yeah, a lot of other athletes should do the same thing.
Yeah, I think I'm all for speaking. I just feel like during this time, man, like, not during this time, I just feel like, I don't know, man. I wasn't around when Ali was taking a stance and some other folks took a stance. I think you saw in the Jordan documentary, he really steered clear of politics. A lot of athletes, you know, that I remember growing up, you know, NBA and NFL, never got involved. Maybe I was just a little kid and didn't realize stuff, things that were social going on, but I don't remember athletes taking a stance. Not that racism didn't exist. Maybe it just was hidden. I don't know. Or it just wasn't being filmed. I think more athletes now are taking a stance, but I just feel like, you know, when somebody, you know, as smart as LeBron is, man, as a genius as he is, like, I don't think people respect his opinion. I think Black people do. Right. But I think I think in general.
You don't think his core followers, which are millions of people, you don't think they like, and I'm not saying exclusively, like, I'm not saying the Black people who like him because he's a basketball player. I'm talking about, like, legitimate people that follow this dude's career in high school. Like, they
I think fans do. Do I think LeBron's fans care when LeBron makes a statement? Yes. But do I think that the average person that doesn't know or like the NBA, if LeBron speaks, do they think, like, yeah, like, you know what? I'm going to listen to this guy. No, man. Like, it goes back to the fucked up shit, like, that, you know, Laura Ingraham said, like, just shut up and dribble. I think a lot of people just want athletes to shut up and dribble, right? Like, I've had people at work say, hey, yeah, I just don't think, you know, you see it a lot on social media, you know, we shouldn't mix sports and politics. And I'm like, why not? Like, they're human. They're more than just a basketball player, just like you're more than just an accountant, right? Like, why do you get to have an opinion as an accountant? But because their job is to entertain, they only can entertain. Well, you're a coin operated monkey for a company. Why do you get to have an opinion?
Right. And that's just like you being at work and you're the accountant, and somebody's telling you the only absolute thing you can talk about here is numbers and math and budgets. Like, don't talk about, and don't say what you did this weekend. Don't talk about Trump. Don't talk about liberals. Like, I mean, come on. Like, what kind of culture is that where, like, you can only talk about what you do?
Yeah. And then I think what I've seen it when people do step up and say stuff, you know, then we talk about the cancel culture, right? Like, you saw where Dolly Parton came out and made a stance like, hey, no, like, Black lives do matter. Man, everybody just wrote her off. Like, I saw a comment that was like, how dare you? You know, you made a living off of hillbillies and rednecks. Now you're going against your own people. Man, it's crazy. People went off in the comments on her. So it's like, man, like, even people that stand up that you think you know, their fan base may not agree. They're getting, dude, the cancel culture is crazy, bro. Did you see the whole thing on the big thing now is the Netflix with the with that TV show Cuties?
Oh, with the it's about some young chicks, isn't it?
Yeah, man. Like our neighbor just mentioned, she canceled her Netflix. Like she was like, man, the camera angles were so unnecessary. She was like, it's because I was like, hey, don't you think anybody that's a pervert and a creep can take any TV show, I don't care if it's Full House, yeah, and be like, yeah, if you're turned on by something, like if you're turned on by doorknobs, you can't cancel doorknobs. If you're a weird person, you're like, man, those doorknobs really make me hot and warm and fuzzy. You're not gonna go get rid of all the doorknobs, right? If there was people that like doorknobs, you can find any creepy weirdo person, because we live in a fucked up society, that, you know, is turned on by something. So I was kind of like, yeah, like, remember those child pageant movies or those child pageant shows? Like, yeah, you might have a crazy person watch it, but that show didn't get canceled. But anyway, so I'll say this right now. I didn't see Cuties.
I didn't either.
I talked to Tina. She said she saw it, and I talked to my neighbor. She said, and both of them were like, yeah, man, those camera angles are so unnecessary. Like, it's so obvious that they could have said, you know what? We're not gonna promote this, right? Like, you're not showing like the crotch, even though it's covered, of a 9-year-old. Like, yeah, why are we doing this? Which is kind of crazy, man, because you think, you know how many people had to approve that show before it got released? Like, you're telling me that not one person sat there and didn't raise their hand and say, and obviously their job is tied to that show being produced, but like there wasn't anybody that jumped up and said, you know what, guys, this ain't right, man. Like, I'm not like a cameraman didn't say, I'm not shooting that angle of a 9-year-old kid. Paycheck or not, like, I'm out.
Yeah. No, I actually, so you know how when you access Netflix and whatever is like their promoted show will just automatically like start playing the trailer.
Yeah.
No, I saw it and I'm like, all right, like, what is this about? And the way they showed the girls dancing in the trailer, and then I felt like, okay, well, maybe it's going to start off like this, and then it's going to have her dancing as like a woman, and then it's going to be a story about like an adult woman dance troupe, and it just remained as this, that through the entire duration of the trailer, it was all about these little group of girls, and I felt like I had this feeling during the trailer, like, why would somebody want to watch a group of little girls dance provocatively, like, for a whole show? And like, why would this whole show be about this? And that was my feeling. And this is the first time I'm hearing that, like, it is a big deal. Cause I felt like in my heart of hearts, like, people are probably gonna have something to say about this. And it, if you watch a trailer, like, I would not want my, you know, when my daughter turns 8, I would not want her dancing on. Camera dancing that way.
Not for the world to see, right? Like,
at home, having fun in her room with her friends, okay, fine. With your door closed, cool. Have at it. But if, like, that's what you're doing and you want to record it and put it on live screen, like, I'm going to have to postpone this until you get a little bit older.
Yeah, I heard something about, like, the show is actually a French-based show. Again, I don't know much about it. I just know that, like, they're the next company that is a part of the cancel culture. And like, I was shocked, like the couple up the street that actually canceled, like, they're, you know, not that the cancel culture is political, but like, you know, I don't even know where they stand politically, but they were actually the last people I think would cancel it. And you know, what's funny is they have two boys. They don't even have a daughter, but she was like, man, I just imagine my friends with little girls. And she was like, I couldn't take it. But like, yeah, so like she's done with Netflix, bro. Like, done, like, canceled it, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't want to see the shit. I can tell it's probably,
I just feel like you would have no interest in it, like, unless you like watching a story about a young girl who's in this provocatively dancing troupe. And it's what the whole show's about. So
yeah, like I saw it, but I have no interest even watching the trailer because I'm like, okay, number one, I don't like dancing TV shows.
Right.
I had no idea what it was about. So okay, it doesn't even look interesting. Like it's little kids. Yep. I don't want to watch shit little kids, man. I watch enough little kids stuff as it is. I'm trying to
And I was gonna say, when I first saw it, I actually was looking at it like, because there was this one movie, I can't remember, just a few days ago, it was a little boy who was like a genius or had special powers. He ran off with his dad. And, well, not ran off with his dad, but like he was trying to escape being abducted by these people with his dad. He's running away. And when I saw it, I was like, oh, this might be like a cute, like inspirational, like cool thing for my girl to watch. When I saw it, and like Elin's really big into like ballet, and like she wants to like take dance classes. Like she talks about dancing a lot, so I thought it could have been cool for her to even watch. And yeah, bro, about 20 seconds into the trailer, I'm like, nah.
Yeah, I think the sexualization of society is at an all time high just because we have more, you know, fingers in the outside world, primarily through our devices on our phones. We can see what's going on, right? Like it's like, you know, Emery, like is not really, doesn't have her own phone, doesn't have her own devices, but like, you know, if you hold my phone real quick, you can watch TikTok. Like she knows all those little dances.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like, dang, man. Like, and all of those dances are not, it ain't the hokey pokey, bro. Like that shit is pretty provocative stuff, you know?
Yep.
And I think the older you get, the more you digest it, and like it's only gonna get worse, man. You see these songs with the WAP and all this stuff coming out, man. It is a tough time to raise daughters. You know, and then you got like, man, like the whole, it's like a whole nother segment, but like the whole trafficking thing with kids is, man, like you really have to have your head on a swivel, man. Like they're like snatching kids up, bro.
Yeah.
They are truly snatching kids up. Did
something happen recently?
What's that?
Did something happen recently? Like some kids?
Bro, daily. Like,
talking about,
yeah, no, like.
Like I know that it's a, you know, something that we're dealing with like globally, but I'm saying like there's something specifically happened with like you heard that just made you mention that, or you're just speaking about it?
I'm just saying from stuff that I shared on social media. You know, I follow Black and Missing Foundation and a couple of Instagram pages for missing and exploiting kids, just because I'm finding like I want to make sure that I have techniques and I'm educated on what to look for to make sure that we don't put, you know, the family in a situation that we don't want to be in. So they give a lot of tips and tricks on how to protect your kids. So I want to be aware of that because I was kind of like a lot of people that just didn't believe. I didn't think it would ever like get this big. Like I thought it was like, okay, kids that are orphans or running from home or kids in group homes. Like, nah, man, like they're grabbing kids from moms at Targets. Yeah, so definitely encourage you as a parent to take a look at that just to make sure you're on the up and up, man. But like, you know, you just got to be very cautious of where your kids are and like even how you're positioned, like how, like, you know, like I follow a couple Instagram sites too on like, you know, executive protection and defense, and they give you little tips and tricks like how to make sure you're always aware of your surroundings and like just stuff that you don't think about, bro, as just you go out of your parking lot and go to Publix or Harris Teeter and grab something, but just little things about like what car to park next to, what to look out for, like little things, you know, that help you not be a victim, you know? So maybe I'm just paranoid, but I just don't think you can ever be too.
You should share those. I would love to follow those or subscribe and get that as well, man.
Yeah, man. Can't ever now be too careful.
Yeah, now, you know, we're in this data culture. I mean, now it's about finding out how to like apply all of, you know, the useful stuff that we, that's all at, that at a fingertip. How do we apply that to our daily lives and ensure the protection of our family, ourselves? You know, I'm like, I think we talked about this before. Like, I'm really, really itching for COVID to end, because my kids are gonna start jujitsu as soon as we got a green light and we're back on the right path with this COVID crisis. Because I too want them to be prepared for every possible situation they could face, especially for Elin, because if she's in a situation to where she needs to be able to defend herself while she's on her back, she will be able to do that against a person that's bigger than her.
And yeah, I love it, man. I follow the Gracie, all the Gracie stuff on IG too.
Oh, okay.
You know, what's funny, man, my buddy, he has Tyson. We were out in Vegas. Tyson was, I was copping a watch, and next to the watch store was a sports memorabilia spot, and Tyson was signing autographs. But my buddy got, he paid $150, but he got a pair of boxing gloves signed by Tyson, bro.
Mm.
For $150. So he was going to frame them. I'm like, man, that's like, there's a couple like pieces of sports memorabilia that would be like, to me, epic. Like Tyson glove sign, a Jordan basketball, a Tiger Woods golf ball, like, you know, a Serena tennis ball. Like, man, that's like a key piece, you know.
Oh, how did he get him signed by Tyson?
Because Tyson was doing a meet and greet, and you paid $150, and you got in line.
Can you imagine just having access to all those types of streams of money just because of like who you are? Like, you've actually built your career up to that point and gotten so much exposure where you can basically be like, I'll stand here and write my name on anything you want me to, and you pay me to do that.
Yeah,
for as many people that's willing to stand in this line, I will sign my name and get $150 each pop.
I think it was about 3 hours. So you got a picture with him.
Oh,
he shook his hand, and $150 for the signed gloves.
Great. That's a great idea, man.
Yeah, man.
And then I wonder how many of those people are resellers, and they're like, as soon as they get that signature, they're off to eBay.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sure they are. Like, I wonder how you verify the authenticity of that signature. Yeah. You know, like, shit, I can sign some gloves and say Tyson signed them. You know, you learn the signature.
Right.
But I'm sure there's some places that actually verify the authenticity. Like, I'm sure otherwise, shit, everybody would say, hey, man, this is a Michael Jordan basketball. This is a Floyd Mayweather. You know.
Yep. But yeah, man, you put jujitsu on the brain. But yeah, you'd be a monster if you knew jujitsu. Like, your size, like people my size and much smaller could beat a person your size or bigger. That is unskilled in jujitsu.
Well, that's how sound thing size matters, right?
While they're only up, by the time you get to a blue belt, you should be able to defend yourself against you should be able to submit at will a person larger than you, an unskilled person at will. You're not expected to be able to necessarily beat a person that's larger than you. That is equally as skilled as you are. So in that sense, like, size does matter.